Joining me now in the studio, Summit County Council Member Glenn Wright. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with a Little Valley subdivision. An approved special exception here was not the final approval. It would have sent it on to the Snyderville Planning Commission?
That's correct. There was a request for a special exception to put 12 units of housing on this 108-acre lot with 2.5 to 3 acre lot sizes. They needed a special exception because the zoning there is 5 acre lot sizes.
Right. You voted in favor of the special exception.
Yeah.
How come?
It was a complicated issue. I think we had the four council members there had four different opinions on giving the whether we should or should not give the special exception. The thing we did not rule on last night was whether or not there should be 12 or 6 units of housing there. Chris Robinson started the Chairman Robinson started the discussion with taking that off the table, because then we wouldn't be able to be the appeal body if that comes back to us. But I think that is really the core issue. If the landowner has the right to move 12 units or 6 more units into that development, then in my mind, clearly the best way to do that was through clustering and open space. We didn't really decide that issue last night. And the other opinions, you know, Roger Armstrong is essentially against all special exceptions because he thinks it sets a bad precedent for our legal position in the future on future appellants and applicants. Kim Carson was very sympathetic to the local residents who have larger lots, and the provision in the county, the Snyderville Basin Plan, respects existing land use in the area. The planning, the Snyderville Basin Plan also recommends that we cluster and create open space. So we actually have some conflicting issues that we have to deal with. I suspect the applicant will figure out a way to get it back to us again in the future.
Well, what I can't figure out is why you guys didn't know whether or not the 6 units were allowed to be in this development or not. I mean, shouldn't that have been figured out months ago?
The 6 units are allowed to be in that plot of land. That was never in question. The question
the
is...
additional can, six
the
is
additional
what
six, and that's the legal issue that is going to be decided in the future. There's two opposing opinions on it. The appellants say that, or the people opposing the special exception say that there is no right to move those 6 units into that particular parcel. Dave Thomas, our civil attorney, says they do have that right. You know, I tend to go along with the legal opinion I'm being given by the county's attorney's office.
Well, then why would you vote in favor of the special exception? You're just going to win it.
Because if 12 units are, if you're going to put 12 units there, then in my opinion, the best way to do it is through clustering and open space. If you don't reduce the lot size, then the 12 units will be scattered out over the entire parcel and you will have no open space.
All right, so
that was my particular logic.
You voted on the issue before you, 12 lots.
Actually, we didn't. We voted on the lot size. We specifically did not make a determination on how many units would go in that parcel because Chairman Robinson thought that it could come back to us as an appeal in the future.
Okay,
but if he ruled on it Monday night, then it would skip us and go to the district court.
Okay, but it still sounds like you're putting the cart before the horse. Why don't you just decide and figure out that legal question before ruling on anything?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think in retrospect, I would have changed my motion to actually make that determination Monday night. But clearly there weren't votes to do anything on that Monday night. So it's gonna churn through the legal and planning process for several more months. And so, I think we'll see it again.
Can the applicants ask this to return to the council once Doug Clyde comes back and we have a tiebreaker?
I don't know. Can't answer that question. I suspect their lawyers will figure out a way to continue the process.
Yeah. Back to Roger Armstrong's argument. I mean, he's also an attorney, not necessarily a land use attorney. But again, his argument that maybe we shouldn't approve any special exceptions, that makes some sense, no?
It does. And we may visit that in the future. I think if Roger had his way, he would remove the special exception from our code. And I think we'll have a discussion on that. I'm going to have to listen to some arguments about that before I decide where to come down. As far as I'm concerned, if it's a tool we have in our arsenal, then we should use it the best way possible. Roger is afraid of setting precedents. I'm not afraid of making decisions that will set good precedents.
But haven't we already set precedent? I mean, we did this for the height exception for the Woodward Gargosa, no?
Yep.
So precedent's been set.
Precedents have been set on different issues. That was a different issue. This is a clustering and open space issue. That was a height issue.
Okay.
I think Roger's correct in saying that the more special exceptions we give, the more opportunity we're going to give landowners the opportunity to appeal to higher authority, and we're going to wind up with more legal suits. And that may be the reason why we in the future we decide to eliminate special exceptions, but that'll be up to us to decide in the future.
Okay, let's move to the Jeremy Noisewall. After your questioning of the folks from UDOT, what's your impression of their rationale for this wall and berm plan?
I think the UDOT rationale is firmly based in federal policy and state policy. There is some argument as to whether or not they're applying that policy correctly, and the people behind the Citizens Against the Wall movement have made some arguments on that particular issue. We are going to have a separate opinion from another engineering group on that in the future, probably fairly near future.
So should they have waited for the second opinion before sending out the ballots?
They think they had enough reason to send out the ballots right now, and they have some time constraints. The project is going to start next year, and it's going to go forward with or without the wall.
And do you feel like the wall and the berm provide some tangible benefit for the receptors?
I think the engineering reports say that it does. We are going to see another engineering report, so we'll see if that changes that particular opinion. I think the interesting thing about Monday night's session was this is the first time we've actually heard from the receptors. We've heard lots of testimony, both in work sessions concerning the wall and in public comment sessions, about opposing the wall from people who aren't going to like the look of it. This is the first time we've heard from the people actually voting on the issue, the receptors. And they were pretty clear that they want some noise reduction. Many of them have been there for 15 to 20 years and have seen the noise levels increase. I certainly can't complain that they are being selfish about this issue. Things have gotten worse in their neighborhood due to the growth in the county. I think the main thing I would like the both sides of this issue to think about is how can we come to a solution that hopefully considers everybody's point of view and solves the issue the least amount of hard feelings in the neighborhood.
So still to come, we're going to find out more.
We'll find out more. Certainly from the testimony of the receptors at Monday night's meeting, I have a feeling that the ballot will be in favor of the wall. Now, what UDOT has told us that once that decision is made by the receptors, there can be further modifications to the plan. And we discussed the possibility of, instead of berm and wall, a berm and trees. That will not provide as much noise attenuation. But the receptors may say, you know, it's not quite as much, but yeah, I have to look at the wall also. And they may say, yeah, we'll go along with that. And that's going to be a decision that will be made between UDOT and the receptors. All the county can do on this is kind of facilitate the discussion and try to please as many people as we can.
Okay. Real quick, the Path to Positive Communities organization. Tell me a little bit about that.
That's a national organization that is trying to promote action on climate change nationwide and to promote it through diverse communities. They came to Utah as the first state they actually came to try to get acknowledgement of this particular issue in both urban and rural settings. And that's why Summit County was asked to join this particular project.
Yeah. Do we need one more organization dealing with climate change? I mean,
do we need one more organization dealing with climate change? I think climate change is probably one of the most important issues the world can face. And it's going to affect Summit County at a rate that probably is double the rest of the world. So it's important for us to be on board. The more support we can get from more diverse communities, the better we're going to be.
So once you have this support, then what do you do?
Well,
I mean, you don't have federal administration.
No, we don't. And that's why it's more important than ever for us to take local action, as we have in the past month.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Glenn. Happy Thanksgiving.
You're welcome. Have a good Thanksgiving to everybody.
KPCW News Time now, 8:30. Good morning. Well, Deer Valley doesn't open until Saturday, December 2nd, but with new owners and the expansion plans moving forward, we invited Deer Valley COO and General Manager Bob Wheaton in for an early preview. Good morning, Bob.
Morning, Leslie.
I'm well, thanks. Lots of balls in the air with Deer Valley. Let's start with today's special DABC meeting. Not very often that the Alcoholic Beverage Control Group is this forgiving to hold a special meeting just for an organization. What happened?
We feel so special.
What happened?
It was bureaucratic, I guess, would be one term, but not necessarily in a bad way. I think that there, you mentioned balls in the air, and that's exactly what's going on with the transfer of ownership. With Deer Valley, it's been the same ownership for 37 years. So, to go back 37 years and cover some of the very appropriate inspections that needed to happen, license transfer, business license, local consent, all that kind of stuff. It took some time, and DABC does operate under some pretty stringent guidelines, rightfully so. And because of the timing on everything that had to happen prior to the DABC transfer of liquor licenses, the timing got short. And so that's why we were granted a special hearing today.
Yeah, so I guess they're a little bit forgiving with this. No fines apparently will be charged because you had it in progress. It just didn't happen before the 30 days.
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's
okay. Correct. So there will be liquor at Deer Valley restaurants this weekend.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now to last Friday's meeting with staff and representatives from NewCo, as we're calling it. They still don't have a name, the new owners?
They do have a name, but we don't know what it is yet. And the reason for that is that the name has been identified. Now it's just going through all the trademarking process and all that kind of stuff, all of the protection processes statewide and federally.
Okay, so we'll hear about that soon? Before opening day?
Rumor is probably not. Well, I don't know. The representation is that we'll know about it before the holidays.
Sounds like the
Christmas
holidays.
I think that's before the holidays in 2017.
Okay.
But we'll see. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's supposed to be announced before Christmas.
All right. So this was an opportunity for staff to meet with whom?
Well, Brian Trefcani, who is the CEO of the new partnership, and David Perry, who's the COO. They came in. They had Karen Sanford, who's their general counsel, is there. Brittany, who's I don't remember what her official title is, but she's over HR for the partnership, and Eric, who's looking at marketing, and they had a few people there, and it was an opportunity for everybody on staff at Deer Valley to really better understand. We've obviously been talking about this for quite a while, but to better understand and actually put face to a name and have the opportunity to go up, you know, shake hands, ask questions eye to eye, and get everything out on the table.
Yeah. What did you hear? I mean, what did staff want to know? Or were you not part of that?
Oh, everything. No, everybody was there. You know, this is, you know, Deer Valley's operated as an open book, all the cards on the table, kind of joint for a long time. And this new partnership is not any different. And so there were a lot of questions about, you know, what about the future? Where are we looking? How do we do this? You know, we've been, you know, kind of on our own, if you will, for such a long time. What's the future look like for us? How about benefits? How about compensation? How about passes? You know, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of really, really good, pertinent questions.
Did they have answers for them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about the relationship with one of the new owners, Eric Resnick. I think he's the CEO of KSL Partners, one of the partnerships in this new ownership.
That's correct.
You and he go back a long way, huh?
We do. We do. And as most of the people in the new partnership, I mean, I've known David Perry for, it seems like, 100 years, at least 25. I first met David when he was working at Whistler Blackcomb for IntroWest at that point. And then he moved to Aspen 15 years ago. So anyway, we've been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
So.
Will it be awkward now having a best friend as boss?
No, because at least for me, you know, Edgar and Roger Penske were, and still, well, Edgar passed away, but his son Lessing, and Roger and I are best friends. So, you know, for me, having a best friend as a boss, it's kind of business as usual.
Yeah. I know, because it's a private sale that we'll never hear the purchase price, but lots of numbers out there on the street. And I guess I was surprised when I heard what seemed to be the most accurate. I mean, were you surprised by what they paid for this?
Well, there was a little bit of speculation, and still is, and probably will be for quite some time. The, you know, Deer Valley has a fair amount of value in the brand and obviously in the operation. So, you know, fair market was impressive.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm hearing is like four times the amount Park City went for.
Don't know that.
Well, let's see. What are we going to what we will see now with the purchase of Mayflower Stickteen, at least the mountain parcel, by Extel and Gary Barnett, is now the development of Deer Valley into Wasatch County. And then once that happens, then you'll have another portal. So then will we start to see the development of the parking lots here? I mean, are we talking 20 years down the road for that to happen?
The whole area over there, Leslie, it is a long-term development plan. And part of it's because of the scope, part of it's because of the geography. And part of it is that there are still a number of parcels over there. So you're right, Gary. And so Gary's the principal at Extel. And, you know, the Mayflower piece is only one piece over there. There's Pioche that United Park City Mines had, that Wells Fargo still has. There's Blue Ledge, and then there's still Deer Crest, and then, you know, the bottom of the gondola that we own. So there's still a lot of partners and few pieces to put together over there.
Yeah, you did meet with the new owner of the Mayflower property. What did he have to say on how soon all of this happens? I mean, I know that they're meeting already with Wasatch County planners.
Well, you are connected. So yes, I did meet with him. It wasn't the first time. I know it won't be the last. And the discussion was pretty relatively high level. And it was talking about scope. We did not talk about specific timing. We did, you know, we both clearly understand that it is a, you know, it's not a 5-year deal over there. You know, it is a longer term deal. You know, there's a fair amount of desire all the way around to kind of get rolling as soon as we can. The actual definition of as soon as we can is still yet to be determined. There's still a fair amount of infrastructure that needs to go in over there and a fair amount of planning. You know, what you don't want to do is start the deal, especially with the size of the effort that needs to happen over there, and then get 2 years into it and go, oh, God, we forgot about that, or, geez, it would have been nice to do this, or whatever. So, you know, appropriately, there's some time to be taken for long-term planning and then short-term construction planning.
So now that Barnett owns the lease that Deer Valley has had with Mayflower District, you know, we're talking about a huge swath of land, right? From Mayflower to Flagstaff?
No.
No?
No.
How much leasable property is there now with that lease?
Under the lease, 150 acres, I think.
Okay. So that then transferred to Extel, yeah?
Correct.
And you have what?
How many years?
How many years left on that lease?
There's 30-some years left.
Yeah. So what does that mean, though, for Deer Valley?
Not much. I mean, it's, you know, 30 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So, and I must say, Gary has been very much a gentleman and has a good focus. And I, you know, I'm optimistic about the future.
Let's talk briefly about the Solitude Land Exchange. You had a meeting, I believe, with the Forest Service on behalf of Solitude. You had mentioned this land exchange at last week's update to the Board of Realtors. So what's the land exchange about?
Solitude is somewhat unique in that most ski areas that have a Forest Service permit, the Forest Service land is up at the top of the mountain kind of deal, and you know, most ski areas, the base is either privately owned or partially owned. And Solitude is unique in that the Forest Service owns the land under the base. And the top of the mountain, pretty much from a third of the way up to the top, so the top two-thirds of the mountain are privately owned. That's part of what we bought when we bought the ski area. So there are 287 acres that are adjacent to Forest Service land in Big Cottonwood Canyon that Royal Street owns. And that property is the Forest Service would really like to acquire that property. Quite frankly, we would really like them to have it. And vice versa, they would really rather not be in the base ski area business, and we would support that. So we're just looking at doing that exchange. There are a number of focuses over there, or a number of entities that are focused on it. Salt Lake City, because all of that is in the watershed. Salt Lake County, because that's part of their jurisdiction. And then obviously the Forest Service, because they own the land under the base area and are looking to acquire this 287 acres. Presently, there are density units and development allocated to that 287. So what Royal Street would be giving up is the value of that development as well. And we're okay with that. We're more than okay with that.
Would it transfer down to the base then? Any more development?
No.
Or no,
nope.
You just
nope. So and that's and again, Leslie, the we're more than okay with that because what's presently planned over there is good. I mean, it's Big Cottonwood Canyon's a different deal, and it needs to be treated as such. And part of the development over there that was initially envisioned has to do, it's a little crude, but it has to do with the capacity of the sewer that runs up there. I mean, there's only so many connections and so many, we could get pretty graphic, but anyway, that's one of the very appropriate limiting factors in Big Cottonwood Canyon. So, and nobody's going to put another sewer up there.
So when talk about bureaucracy, this Forest Service is one of those real slow ones. So when does this happen?
Well, it's in process right now. Actually, I have a meeting next, I forget whether it's next week or the week after, but coming right up with the forest supervisor. And so we've had, I don't know, maybe half a dozen meetings with them already. So it's in process, and it's actually a dual-track process because it's the meeting down in Salt Lake has to do with the administrative process. And then when Jason Chaffetz was in Congress, he introduced a legislative bill that had to do with the four ski area land exchange and then also the overlay of the protective zone, if you will, that had Big Cottonwood, Little Cottonwood, even went down to the Bonneville Trail down Salt Lake.
Okay. So we don't know.
So it's kind of a two-track deal.
All right. So the end of the year?
Oh,
probably
no.
Not.
Oh, no. No. You were
next ski
very
season.
Accurate when you said it's not a short-term deal or it's a long-term deal, however you put it. That is the case.
Yeah. Does this open any doors then for one Wasatch happening, an idea we haven't heard about in a long time?
This land exchange, not necessarily.
Okay. We're going to have to.
And not necessarily meaning it really doesn't change either way.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it up for that. We'll bring somebody back from talk a little bit about opening when you know how much. How's snowmaking going? It's warm out there.
Well, right now, not very well. But the we were talking outside just before I came on. We do a weather report twice a day for snowmaking. And this morning's weather report, the gentleman from Patrol who puts it together also included a recap of last year. We're actually ahead of last year right now for snowmaking.
Good news.
All is good.
All right. Hey, Bob, thanks.
Thank you, Les.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, joined in the studio now by Tom Kelly with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Ski season is here. I know it. I can feel it.
Well, we got a lot to get through, so let's start with that. But first, I wanted just to note, I had seen a press release about a new sponsorship from Comcast. Does that mean that we're going to get to watch ski racing on Comcast?
Well, I think it's been on Comcast, actually, the past couple of seasons since the Universal Sports things changed. But actually, let's kick it off with that, how to watch the sport this year. It's pretty amazing what's transpired over the last few years, and you're going to be able to watch virtually every single race, every single competition in all sports this year on somewhere in the NBC Sports Group, whether that's on NBC, the flagship network, which will be the home for our Killington World Cup this weekend with Michaela Schifrin, or NBCSN, or the new Olympic Channel. And for those of you who've been following the last couple of years, Universal HD is gone. Now we have the Olympic Channel, so that will be one of the homes in the NBC Sports Group. So you do need to go to your local cable or your satellite provider, subscribe to both NBCSN and the Olympic Channel, and you'll be able to watch everything from everywhere this winter on mobile apps, on the computer, and on television.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well, World Cup here in the States at Killington. Again, this is a powder core resort, and this is the second year in a row, I think, that they've hosted that.
Yeah, and a big thanks to John Cumming and, in particular, Hervig Dempster, who's given so much time to put on this race at Killington last year and again this year. The Xfinity Killington Cup taking place Saturday and Sunday. Giant slalom and slalom. We'll have a good crew of athletes there, most notably Michaela Schifrin, who's now the overall World Cup leader after two events. She will go in with the lead. She picked up a win there last year in the slalom, had a good showing in the giant slalom, so we'll look for more of that. 30,000 fans expected, and also Park City's own Megan McJames competing there as well.
Okay. And then the men will be in Lake Louise?
Yeah, men up in Lake Louise for the opener up there on the speed side. All the race sites are looking good. Lake Louise got its snow control a couple of weeks ago. Beaver Creek was approved the other day, and Killington was as well. So fingers crossed weather holds, and we should have great racing this weekend in Lake Louise and in Killington with Michaela Schifrin.
Okay. We've got the Nordic ski opener in Finland.
I was just on the phone this morning with Chris Grover, our head cross-country coach, and things are looking great there. It's going to be a spectacular weekend in Ruka, Finland. We have the cross-country opener, ski jumping, which actually opened a week ago, but we'll have our first team there this weekend, and also Nordic combined. And to top it off, we have our freestyle aerialist there, simply training, getting ready for the opening World Cup in China coming up in a few weeks. Big ones to watch, Jesse Diggs. She'll be kicking off the season, Keegan Randall as well, Simi Hamilton and others. All three of those disciplines are racing all 3 days, so it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and you can watch it all live, actually, on the Olympic Channel.
Okay. We also have, you mentioned the ski jumping and Nordic combined events happening there as well.
Yeah, we've got some good local athletes going there on the Nordic combined side. Brian Fletcher, Taylor Fletcher, Ben Barron will be competing in the Nordic combined. On the ski jumping side, Kevin Bickner, Will Rhodes, and Mike Glaster. Kevin Bickner, for sure the top jumper we've seen in quite a few years. I love this little factoid. Last year, Kevin Bickner from Chicago, Illinois, he scored more World Cups points himself last year than the entire team in the previous 12 years. So he has definitely got it pointed in the right direction. Will Rhodes from right here in Park City, who's been really dominant at U.S. Championships the last couple of years, particularly here on these hills. And all of those athletes on the Nordic combined, the jumping side, will be competing for Olympic spots come December 30th and 31st with the Olympic trials right here at the Utah Olympic Park.
Okay. Free skiers in Austria.
Free skiing actually kicked off a few months ago in New Zealand, and they're going to jump back into the slopestyle side. We were not on the podium in the opener, hopefully going to change that in Stubai. We've been training in Stubai for the last few years. It's a little valley tucked to the southwest of Innsbruck. Should be a good competition. Again, you can watch that live on Olympic Channel.
Yeah. Any place have a half pipe open yet? You need lots of snow for that.
Don't have any half pipes open right now. They're making extremely good progress at Copper right now. We had great alpine training, and we hope to kick it off with half pipe training soon. They're making good progress there. Bit of warm temperatures this week, but they've been making snow, and they're going to get back on it. We have our opening Toyota U.S. Grand Prix coming up there the second weekend of December. Looking forward to kicking off the Olympic selection process there.
Okay, and of course, it is an Olympic season. What are we doing about that?
Well, it's interesting this year. Every single event that we talk about here in the weekly report is going to have some impact on Olympic selection. So each sport is selected a little bit differently relative to the point selection, but we take athletes, select athletes for the team from the best events in the world. So they're going head-to-head with the best in order to make that team. All of the teams will ultimately be nominated and named in the latter part of January. So results they get right now are going to accumulate, and hopefully we'll have about 100 athletes on that team that will go to Pyeongchang, and we'll get the output of that sometime late January. Along the way, we'll be coming through town here. In addition to the Olympic trials at the Utah Olympic Park, December 30, 31, we will have the Deer Valley World Cup, and it's coming up a little bit earlier this year. It's in the second week of January, so it'll be a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this year. A little bit of an unusual schedule due to kind of a compressed schedule in that we have to have all of our Olympic selection events done by the 22nd of January. So a little bit earlier on the Deer Valley World Cup, and we'll be talking more about that here each week.
Is that the reason for no street dance? Because it's in the middle of Sundance?
Yeah, we looked at that together with Deer Valley, and it isn't so much that it's in the middle of Sundance. It's just that with the schedule being Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, if we were going to do a street dance and a concert, it would put it on a Tuesday, and we didn't feel that would really be quite as interesting as it doing when we normally do. So decided to take a pass on that this year, but we'll still be under the lights with great action, action that will decide the Olympic team on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of that week.
Okay, Tom, talk to you next week.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Caught me.
Close.
U.S. Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Sure. Well, the Summit County Mental Health Alliance has named two new chairs for Summit County's mental health efforts. Steve White is with Communities That Care Committee, and Dusty Frisbee is with the Steering Committee. Dusty joins me now in the studio, along with Aaron Newman, who is Summit County's Mental Health and Substance Abuse Coordinator. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning.
Aaron, real quick, I just need a little bit of background. We've got lots of committees, alliances, connections. It seems like we just got a lot of duplication going on, but is it pretty cut and dry?
It's pretty strategic. It is. So part of what we have is the steering committee is really our board of directors for the Summit County Mental Wellness Alliance. It's, as I've talked before, it's a community initiative and a community committee to really guide our efforts in mental health and substance abuse program. We're really excited to have Dusty sort of take the lead on that ship. So our steering committee is, I hate to say a committee on committees, but it really, all of our committee chairs from everything from our communications work group, our data collection, our communities that care committee, as well as our access committee, Latino affairs, and criminal justice committee, all report up to the steering committee so that we can see what is everyone working on, what are some of the issues, and where can we create these partnerships between the different committees.
Okay, so what do you see that role as, Dusty?
So part of my role is making sure that we're being accountable to the strategic plan and that we're following what has been laid out. The other part that I've really taken on for myself is to try and get more involvement from the Camas area, the Colville area, just because we don't have a lot of voices at the table. And so I'm really anxious to get out and try and help that happen.
Yeah. Are you a South Summit resident?
I am. Yes. I live over in Camas.
Yeah. Okay. Does it feel like, though, that they've not part of this countywide effort?
Right. So initially when this strategic plan or the initiative got put in place, it was a year ago after the tragic deaths of the two teens here in Park City. And so Park City really rallied for mental health at that point. And so it was very local to Park City. But as gaps in care started to be identified, it is countywide. And so really it should be an issue that the whole county is passionate about or involved in, certainly.
Yeah. So how many committees do you have reporting to you? Your committee?
We have five committees and then three work groups.
Okay, and Communities That Care is part of one of those committees?
Communities That Care is it's a national program. For us specifically, it's our Youth Prevention Committee. So it's identifying the issues within the schools, working with the superintendents, with the teachers. Mary Krista Smith is our coordinator for CTC, and she just held a youth retreat at the National Ability Center where we were able to get student leaders from all three school districts, North Summit, South Summit, Park City, to work collectively to see how they're going to come together and address issues of substance abuse and mental health within the schools.
Yeah. So the county council just recently approved a new strategic plan. So do you really understand what your role is now here, Dusty?
Right. So I just received the ratified copy of the strategic plan from Aaron. And so this weekend I am doing my homework and due diligence to make sure that I completely understand what we have set out to do. I have been involved since the beginning, so I have a good idea. We have a lot of work ahead of us, but I think it's something that we can accomplish certainly over the next several years.
Okay. And Aaron, what does that strategic plan lay out? I mean, can you give us the Reader's Digest view?
So the Reader's Digest, again, is really just looking at five key points. It's how do we improve our access to resources here in the community? As I'm sure you saw during our presentation to the County Council, we asked for $70,000 for an additional Valley Behavioral Health employee specific to Camas and Colville. So that's one of the identified areas for service that we're trying to address through the plan. But then that also includes how do we address issues of office, affordable office space for mental health practitioners. Just like we have a housing issue with affordable housing, we have people that want to see clients 40 hours a week, but they can't afford to have an office space for 40 hours a week. Also, what are some of those critical services we need in our county that we just don't have? Pediatric psychiatry, pediatric counseling is something that we have a large gap on. And Dusty, in her world, has worked with that quite a bit. So we're knowing that we have that gap. The other is, how do we have prevention and education? That's where a lot of our CTC programs in the school comes into play. We have then, how do we make sure we have reintegration? Our drug court program is a key point of that. Deer Valley's been an incredible partner over the years with providing work opportunities and helping people in the program find housing, as well as how do we make sure this is all equitable to our Latino and Spanish-speaking populations, where we've got a lot of different agencies at the table. Max Ventura has been a very big part of helping guide that, as well as Eric Escoval, who's been chairing it. And then we also have, I always forget which, CTC. Well, we have several others.
Yeah, it says something when you even have a hard time remembering them all. Yeah. So, you got your work cut out for you.
We do.
Yeah. Well, anything else? Dusty, you wanted to mention?
Nope, just if anybody from the east side would like to get involved, please contact Aaron at the County Health Department.
Okay, good luck to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.